Welcome back, you hell of a has-beens. It's Cyanon. Got something a little different lined up for you tonight. It's a story about some good old class warfare. We'll be eating the rich tale told to us by Cosmic Symphony, who serenades us with a story of a killer cowpoke taking a bite out of some of hell's upper crust. While you're mulling over the taste of that, let me ask you a question that makes up the name of our story. Are your dreams as dead as they seem? Even now, Stella's not entirely sure how it happened, although she suspects it went something like this. Part 1. At her request, he calls once every 2 weeks, give or take a few days. They are never particularly long conversations. He will update her on his progress. She will snarl and tell him that he isn't being paid to fuck around the Seven Rings while her husband is still breathing and slutting himself out to that imp. The conversation starts out much the same way.
Stolas is hardly an introvert, she scoffs,
on one of the rare days in hell where the weather could almost pass as chilly.
He's out and about more than most nobles of our ilk. I don't see why it's been such a tribulation for you to put a fucking bullet through his skull.
This sort of thing takes time, ma'am. Gotta wait for the right time to strike.
She can hear the leer in his face, and Stella glowers.
If that imp-sucking skank isn't reduced to a rotting, maggot-riddled husk soon, you can forget about this arrangement, and I will personally see to it that you are fed to his gaggle of gluttonous weeds.
Yeah, well, Blitzo's gonna be a bit of a problem, Stryker counters,
and it doesn't escape her notice how pointedly he says the other imp's name.
Guy's not one of Hell's most notorious assassins for nothing. Now that he knows I've got it out for your empty-headed other half, he'll be all over him like a fly on a steaming, horny pile of horse shit.
Stella laughs, and it is only after Stryker asks her if she's all right that she realizes what has just occurred. It is the first time she's laughed. Really, truly laughed in Satan knows how long, and the sound is foreign, unnatural to her ears.
Yes, I'm fine,
she replies swiftly, trying to keep her tone as clipped and brusque as it had been only moments before.
I've just never heard anyone refer to my husband as a steaming, horny pile of horse shit. I must say it's rather fitting.
Glad to hear, ma'am. For a second I was worried I'd offended your delicate sensibilities. She snorts.
Oh, please. You've heard worse from me.
Stella's almost certain she detects a hint of sarcasm in Stryker's tone, but she elects to ignore it. She's still reeling from the laugh his insult had elicited, and she finds that she does not want to continue speaking with Stryker any longer than necessary. As always, she hangs up on him without bidding him goodbye, and banishes all thoughts of Stryker from her mind until that night, as she lies enshrouded within the covers of her bed, in the private sleeping quarters she's occupied for some time now. He had lobbed an insult at her husband, and she had laughed because it felt good to hear someone else peg Stolas for exactly what he was, a steaming, horny pile of horseshit. It had been therapeutic. That was all.
Liar,
whispers a voice from the recesses of Stella's mind, a voice she's not heard for years. Stella curls in on herself, clenching her fists and demanding, pleading, that the voice go away, that it leave her alone. He is a little imp from the backwater Ring of Wrath, and she is the wife of a powerful Guisha, a member of one of Hell's most noble, ancient families. Both literally and figuratively, the cowboy is worlds away from her, not even worth a passing thought. And yet... Here she is, lying in bed and helpless against her brain as it plays the conversation over and over and over. You aren't helpless against anything, and you know it, the voice chides. Stella grabs the nearest pillow, buries her face in the soft, downy material, and screams. He is an imp. He is an imp, and she is a princess, and she had hired him to kill her husband. Their relationship is strictly transactional. No. She refuses to even call it a relationship. He'd needed money, and she'd offered it to him in exchange for Stolas's head on a platter. Maybe literally. She doesn't care how he does it, just as long as he gets it done. That is it. That is all it is. That is all it ever will be. And she can accept that.
Liar.
Part 2. It's just an infatuation. A schoolgirl crush that will, admittedly, burn brightly for a little while, and then extinguish in no time. It will. It will. Stryker's comment had simply made her revert back to her teenage girlhood, before she'd become jaded and cynical and angry at everything and everyone, herself most of all. He'd made her laugh, and so she'd begun to associate him with the carefree, happy Stella that she thought had long since withered and died. That Stella that evidently still lives on, deep within the treacherous caverns of her mind, and another place she will not name, and calls her a liar. She's in the Astropheris Library of the Manor, seated in a huge velvet armchair of deepest navy, flipping through the pages of an ancient tome. Stella can't read it. It's written in a language long since lost to the annals of time. This is merely a distraction, something for her to do so she doesn't stare at her phone for hours, wondering if, when, it will buzz, holding the promise of the husky, silk-smooth voice that has become as familiar to her as her own heartbeat. It doesn't mean anything. She's just eager to have the disaster that is her marriage over and done with. Satan knows Stolas is more trouble than he's worth. Even before he started fucking that imp, he'd driven her up the wall with his penchant for fondling flesh-eating plants and portaling himself to some far-flung galaxy, while she entertained the rest of Hell's nobility at dinner parties. They were never in love. There's no doubt in her mind that Stolas would concur. But for a time, Stella thought they might be friends. Sometimes, in the early years of their marriage and on nights she could persuade him to stay for one of their aforementioned parties, he would offer a backhanded compliment to one of their more vexing guests.
"I must say I admire your confidence, Frederick. There are not many people who could wear that shade of green so unabashedly."
And even when she shot him a glare, she knew that he could see the tug of a smile playing on the corner of her mouth. Smiles do not play there any longer. Stella shifts her weight. The tome is heavy on her thighs, and before she's fully conscious of what she's doing, she reaches into her purse and presses his name in her list of contacts. He answers his phone almost immediately.
"What can I do you for, ma'am?"
Stryker drawls, and oh, his voice is like whiskey, and she is a dreadful liar. Stella falters, searching for the right excuse.
"Do you have any updates for me regarding your progress?"
She settles on this as her cover because it's the safest route to take. Stryker will think nothing of it. She hears a small hiss on the other end.
"Not yet, ma'am, but don't worry. I'm working on it. That amorous ball and chain will be out of your way soon enough."
"Good."
Stella knows she should hang up right now and allow Stryker to get on with his day. But the Stella in her mind and heart, the selfish, romantic teenage girl, doesn't let her.
"Is there something else you need from me, ma'am?"
Stryker sounds tentative, confused. Stella freezes. There are 100 things she wants to say to him in this moment. "I need you here with me. I need you to fuck me until I see stars behind my eyes. I need you to tell me I can still dream." Instead, she retorts,
"No, that will be all."
And promptly hangs up the phone. The book feels like lead in her lap. Part 3. A month passes before she next hears from Stryker. The report is the same as it's always been. He's still laying low, waiting for just the right opportunity. He was also correct in that Stolas's fuck toy would take to hanging off him like a needy infant to its mother's tits. The imp is around much more often than he was before the Harvest Moon Festival. Not every week, certainly not every day, but it's enough to be a noticeable change. She briefly wonders if he doesn't genuinely enjoy Stolas's company, and then asks herself why she even cares in the first place. There's a long pause after Stryker's finished talking, and Stella realizes that he's waiting for her to hang up. She doesn't know what unseen force compels her, but she suddenly blurts out, "How was your day?" Another pause. She definitely caught him off guard. Fuck, she caught herself off guard. It's exactly 6 seconds before Stryker speaks again.
"I'm not sure what you mean by that, ma'am."
"I mean, how was your day? What's not to understand?"
She can't be too friendly with him, lest you start getting suspicious. And that's just about the worst thing that could possibly happen.
"Ah, I'm just not used to higher-ups like you giving a rat's ass about the affairs of us common folk. Well, let's see here. I've been on the move. Don't stick around in one place too long. Can't risk becoming a familiar face. Don't mind it, though. I've never been one to put down roots."
"Of course, of course,"
Stella says absently, then clamps her mouth shut. Stryker chuckles.
"Just got back from a bar. Some shithole in Lust that smelled like cum and piss. No place for a fine lady such as yourself."
A bar. In the Lust Ring, her chest constricts with something and her mind spirals out of control, conjuring up any and all possible scenarios. Did he go there to pick somebody up? Did somebody pick him up? He's extremely good-looking, and she knows that he knows it. He's the kind of imp that could swagger into a bar and have a dozen lascivious hangers-on in 5 minutes flat. If he did meet somebody, did he fuck them? Did they fuck him? Did they go at it in some filthy alley behind a seedy diner, or in the back of a truck in a dimly lit parking lot? Were they attractive? Of course they were. Stryker could afford to be picky. Only someone of equal sex appeal would even be fit to sleep with him. If he rang her up in the middle of the night and asked her to visit him at a dingy motel like a fucking plebeian, would she say yes? Of course not.
Liar.
"I hope you don't mind my asking, but why'd you bother with a question like that?"
Stryker's voice snaps Stella back to reality. She decides to give him the closest thing she can to the truth.
"Curiosity. I have nothing interesting going on in my life whatsoever, because interesting isn't exactly the word I'd use to describe my husband's affair. And I wanted to lose myself in someone else's life for a few minutes. I was merely scratching an itch, as it were."
"Just metaphorically jerking it."
Stryker's voice is playful, almost coquettish, and her breath hitches. She hopes he doesn't notice. Hands on her hips, thrusting into her, grinning wickedly as she is undone.
"Hope you're enjoying yourself, because there's plenty more where that came from, ma'am."
"Yes," Stella replies flatly. "Precisely that."
"So, did I scratch that itch?" Stryker asks in his whiskey voice.
"You did."
"Anything else you need?"
"I need you to tell me I can still dream." "No, that was all."
"All right, then."
Another long, pregnant pause. The unknown force that impelled her to ask him how his day was driving her now to say,
"Good night, Stryker."
Then, so gently she thinks, hopes, it holds the barest trace of affection, Stryker murmurs,
"Good night, ma'am."
She almost, tells him to call her Stella. Part 4. He calls her once every 2 weeks, give or take a few days, to update her on his progress, and she will snarl and tell him that he isn't being paid to fuck around the Seven Rings while her husband is still breathing, and slutting himself out to that imp. Their not relationship is as it has always been, entirely transactional. For the most part. Occasionally, Stella will call him and ask him to scratch her itch, and Stryker will oblige and talk about his day and During these calls, she'll allow the Stella that lives in the most secret part of her mind and her heart to listen to his whiskey voice and fantasize about a life and a person she can never have. And she will tell herself that this is the closest they will ever come to love.